Blog Talk Radio.
What up, world? Welcome to another edition of the Bloody Knuckles Show, DK Show 1 on Twitter, presented by Cage Fights, cage-fights.com. Welcome to another great show. Ladies and gentlemen, you are in for a treat. Man, do we have a lot to talk about, a lot of controversy, a lot of craziness in the MMA world, and a legend losing controversially. Oh, it was upsetting. Dana White actually thought he might have been promoting the next fight, but he actually thought Anderson won tonight. We had the loss of Anderson Silva. He didn't die, but his legacy might have, losing to Michael Bisping in a pretty great match. It could even be a classic. Up there. It's up there. It was very, very good fight. Entertaining. And then also, of course, we have a bunch of news going down. McGregor, Diaz, you got to love it. It's the MMA world. It's always crazy. It's always entertaining. It's just something I love being a part of. So welcome. This is going to be a two-part show, most likely. So stay tuned. We're talking MMA for a long time tonight. And on the line with me, I got the man, the myth, the legend, the man who, the only man ever, Lesnar in NCAA wrestling. Yes, Andrew Meredith, former RIT World, no, I'm just kidding, United States NCAA Division I wrestling champion, beat Brock Lesnar, pinned his ass at heavyweight. God damn, it was excellent. The man who invented the Stockton slap. The man who came back and was a model for Gap. The man who had to say, I did that. The man who still tells ladies that he has a little baby fat. He is the man who gives Nick Diaz a hand slap. He is the dude who told Werdum, don't put up with the crap. You're going to get the heavyweight strap. He is the man who said, God damn, Conor McGregor, one day you'll be champion. Give me some dap. He is the dude who says, let me get a grasp. The RIT paychecks king, the dude with some bling. Bobby Green dancing around in the background. Let me do my thing. It is Andrew. Don't give a fuck. Slap your mama in the butt. Nick Diaz, middle fingers up. Meredith, what's up, homie?
Holy shit. For those who don't know, Ryan, in his previous life, he was in the 1800s, he would announce the old boxers as they came out for the ring.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually where it started, quick history lesson. But on to the show, and for the folks, we do apologize with the normally scheduled episodes. Real life does happen, but that's why we're here.
Is he busy?
This festival, two-part treat. But Ryan, coming in, I gotta say, very, very disappointed. I think that sums up. A little mad. I was extremely mad at first, then sad, and now I'm just disappointed. If I can sum it up in everything.
At least you got Conor McGregor, brother. At least you got him left.
Right, I'm a little nervous after what happened today. And Ryan, it really, kind of sums up the weird week it was.
First of all,
I didn't even realize Anderson was fighting today until the beginning of last week.
No way Anderson should have been fighting 4 o'clock. Come on, this fight should have been on Fox. At least on Fox.
Yes, as I was saying, this.
So many viewers missed out on a great arena. It was a shame.
Yes. So as I was getting to in my point, the whole fight was never it was barely promoted, and this is Anderson Silva, one of the kings of the sport, the guy who will be on the Mount Rushmore, and make it even further, the fight is on Fight Pass as well.
I gotta disagree with you on that one little thing, but I'll let you finish.
About what? The promotion of the fight?
They did do an embedded for it on YouTube, and they usually only do that for pay-per-view fights, there was a lot of, like, you know, stuff going on in London with them doing interviews. And I felt, I mean, I was fully aware, but I follow the sport like a goddamn zombie. But definitely it's like you get busy. This, it wasn't like there was, I mean, there was commercials if you watch a UFC event, but it wasn't like a usual build-up for an Anderson fight. So there was promotion, but not enough of it.
Following the past couple of events that they've had and whatnot in fights, I'm looking at this more as a broadcasting on social media, on the quick commercials. You'll see
they've got to be putting a lot of their money into Conor promotion for March 5th.
I'm just saying for Anderson to fight, I mean, you didn't see him turn on the gas talking about it until the fight was a week out. That's when I started to see it get mentioned on social media and whatnot. So I thought that was very eerie and kind of weird. And then the fact, you know, it is on Fight Pass, which is a little shocking, you know, which was
grimy.
You know, who's going to go that far out of their way? I wonder how many people signed up for Fight Pass and then ended their membership the same day. I was even debating
it. I don't think that many people even signed up just to get this fight. I mean, come on.
It was a grinding move. And just, again, Ryan, this is Anderson Silva we're talking about.
A legacy.
A guy who is, up to this point in time, I mean, he will use what's considered he's in the top of one of the greatest.
The greatest.
Yeah, pretty much. And the fact that it was on Fight Pass on at 4 o'clock, Ryan, I didn't even realize the fight was fucking going on until I got an update. Thank you, Bleacher Report.
I ignored my updates, thank God.
That Musashi knocked someone out, so I realized he was fighting. And I just got to say, all in all, very sad. So it only would be fitting that Anderson lost. I got to ask you this, Ryan, though, because I was kind of thinking about this. The way that Anderson lost, is this possibly, you know, if I hate to say it, but if Anderson was going to lose, this is how I would like to see him lose. I mean, he without a doubt, you know, dealt out way more damage than Michael Bisping.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Anderson got rocked, too. You know, I got to give Bisping some credit. But just for him to go out like that, as opposed to, you know, how he lost to Weidman, I even compare it to the Nick Diaz, you know, performance.
But he lost to a guy who lost to Wanderlei Silva. Like, I know Bisping is good, but look how Rockhold manhandled Bisping. So it has me thinking, like, damn, I never want to see Anderson in there, really against GSP at this point. I don't want to see him against Vitor because I don't know if Anderson's capable anymore. Because really, Andrew, I mean, I know Bisping has been around. If he wins, you know, he wins in this style, but it's usually not against the upper echelon. And if he loses, he usually gets his ass kicked by the upper echelon. Like, his biggest win might have been Kung Lee. Like, you know, he got knocked out by Dan Henderson, Vitor, got beat by Wanderlei Silva. Like, he always has choked. This is the biggest moment of his career. And to me, what stuck out was Anderson showed that he no longer, I don't think, maybe he never possessed it. It was always skills. But he showed low ring IQ. And I don't think he had good preparation for the fight. I can explain why. Basically, I think Anderson, you know, he's a defensive fighter. He is a guy who always has countered people. He gets flashy knockouts, but it's off of a counter. Michael Bisping is not a knockout puncher. Despite knocking down Anderson twice, I feel like it was more Anderson off balance. He did crack him good when he got the knockdown. But Bisping is a guy who, even when he cracked him, he couldn't finish him. He is a guy that's more punches and bunches. Anderson should have fought the style he fought against Nick Diaz. I think he wanted to entertain the fans, show people that he was back. I don't know if it was his gas tank or what, but every time Anderson got aggressive, and that's how you really beat Michael Bisping, Dan Henderson with the left hand, Wanderlei Silva with the decision just being more aggressive, was when Anderson would get aggressive. You can't, especially in London, stand against the cage and let a guy throw double the amount of punches when you have London judges who are already biased and don't know what they're watching most of the time. It's not like boxing where they respect Floyd's countering. Like, they're not going to give Anderson points for dodging punches. They're going to give Bisping points for controlling the octagon. But yet Anderson, it seemed like he just wanted the KO the whole fight, not realizing he was losing rounds. And in that fifth round, even, you know, obviously we got to talk about the third round. But in the fifth round, when, in my opinion, it was obvious Anderson should have went for broke. He did at one point, and then it was like when he had Bisping hurt, he let him off the leash, which was the story of the fight. Like, why aren't you swinging at the end of the round? Why aren't you trying to go for the finish? It was like Anderson really thought he won the decision. I rewatched the fourth round a second time, and I got to say it was a lot closer in Anderson's favor than I thought it was in the beginning. But still, like, if you're Anderson Silva, maybe it was a dump from, adrenaline dump, because we will touch on it. There was a point when Anderson jumped on the cage and thought the fight was over. But it just seemed to me like Anderson picked his spots. Like, the first two rounds, he easily could have won one of those rounds, but he let Michael Bisping dictate the terms, steal the first round with a huge punch at the end, and then get knocked down in the second round. I don't know. Really, it was just a weird performance from Anderson. It was like, you showed that you've changed in the Nick Diaz fight, then you went back to your usual self, but then also you didn't commit to anything in this fight. Some parts of the fight, he was his old self. Some parts of the fight, his new self. He only tried his clinch one time. Obviously, the great flying knee, but you only try that flying knee one time. Like, there was not commitment from Anderson. He didn't try, whenever he would throw his front kick that's so dangerous, he would land, but he didn't throw it enough. He was letting Bisping punch him when we all know that, Anderson's chin is not the same. I just don't think Bisping's the kind of guy you let, because of his style, I don't think you let him tee off on you and then wait for a counter, because he can't deal with aggression well. And I think that was a big problem in this fight. Anderson, I just don't think he had a great game plan. And also, maybe it's age, but he just couldn't finish on those big moments. Obviously, he finished at one point in the fight, but the bell saved Michael Bisping. But that's kind of my opinion on how, when I did have Michael Bisping winning. But Andrew, the third round came. It was a great round. It finished right at the bell. Anderson Silva landed a flying knee that clearly knocked out Michael Bisping. And if he would have just thrown one or two ground and pound punches, Dana White said the same thing. They might have, because you couldn't really hear the bell in the arena, they might have stopped the fight, or Bisping might have not been able to continue. But they allowed Bisping to continue. Anderson thought he won the fight. Didn't even go to his corner. Pretty much had to get off the cage and start the next round. Do you think the fight should have been stopped right there? And do you think that allowing Bisping to continue and that energy dump Anderson probably experienced cost him the fight? Do you think that, that was a big moment? Why didn't Anderson come out for the kill that next round? What happened after that knee? What was your opinion on that huge flying knee in the third round? And do you think the fight should have been stopped? And just roundabout way, what do you think about that crazy round? It was so crazy, it's hard to even ask a question about it.
Ryan, I don't even know if I can compare that to anything I've ever seen. It was by far, one of the weirdest things I had ever seen. I originally thought Anderson won. I was watching it on a stream. It was choppy. Didn't even get that good of a look at the flying knee. I saw Anderson on the fence, and I was like, he did it. He did it again. And I heard him say, wait, they're telling Anderson to get off the fence. Obviously, the fight should have been stopped. It was just timing. If that was me, landed 2 seconds earlier, then yes, the fight just stopped. It's part of the sport. It was extremely fortuitous. Anderson, he clearly knocked him out, but he was literally saved by the bell. It would have been one thing if right when we landed it, was it Herb? Was Herb the official?
Yeah, Herb Dean, who was searching for Bisping's mouthpiece while Anderson was giving Bisping an ass whipping in that third round, Herb Dean was so out of position that if even Anderson would have finished it before the bell, Herb would have been nowhere around to stop the fight. He was totally cross ring. What was he doing?
What was Herb doing? But Herb didn't see it. If Herb was on it, he should have probably stopped it. But, you know, Ryan, that's just the type of the fight it was. And then for the fourth round, you know, of course there has to be a dump. But, you know, Anderson, I saw him bowing down and thanking God. I saw him up on top of the cage. You know what I mean? He was just, he thought he won. So that's definitely got to, you know, fuck with you, pardon my French.
It would have been a huge highlight, real knockout.
And then, you know, I'm sure mixed emotions. One, I agree, I thought Anderson was winning, so he continued to coast. I think he had Bisping. I don't know, I didn't know he hurt him. I don't know why I wouldn't just pounce on it, but I really can't even explain. Again, when it was like the whole fight, except that third round, the fifth round, I didn't get to see a lot of the fourth round because it was choppy. I swear they would, like, circle each other for 4.5 minutes, and then there'd be a little flurry. Because Michael Bisping, Ryan, I don't know if you agree, but I feel like he stole round one and two in the final minute of both rounds by being able to land a big punch. You know what I mean? Like, round two, I actually thought Anderson was up before he got dropped.
The first round, I agree with that. This thing was a lot more aggressive, though. The second round, he dropped Anderson closer. It wasn't at the very end of the round. He got on top of him.
Wasn't there like a minute left?
I'm talking about the second round for Bisping.
In the second round, again, folks, I streamed it, and because Doogie would be...
Yeah, there was a couple minutes left. Anderson recovered. Bisping ended up on... There was like a minute left, maybe. And Bisping had enough time to get on top of him. He couldn't finish him with ground and pound and got into Anderson's guard. And, you know, time expired after about a minute. But, you know, throughout those first two rounds, the story really was, one, you know, Anderson was dodging a lot of great attempts by Bisping, but Bisping was landing a crisp jab, which one thing I saw in the Diaz fight that I was so impressed with, Anderson was throwing this new jab, a great stance, you know, and he just did not utilize that reach and that jab. He went back to his old style of playing around, and I think it really cost him because Bisping was just being a workhorse. And Bisping, I think he won because of the ring IQ. Like, even in the fifth when he was hurt, going for the takedown, it was such a veteran move by him. And then, you know, staying on the attack throughout the fight, even when he was getting hurt. In that fifth round, he came back and started attacking, and Anderson stopped throwing punches like the last minute and 30 seconds when he really needed to get that knockout. Me and my roommate were screaming, "What are you doing, Anderson? What are you doing?" Like, because he had him hurt, and we both felt that he needed that knockout in that round. I'm not sure what his corner told him. But at the end of the day, you know, to me, the sad part was, it was the guy who beat Anderson. I don't think Michael Bisping deserves a victory over Anderson Silva on his resume. It really hurts Anderson's legacy. At this point, you have to question, is he just fighting because the UFC signed him to that 10-fight deal? You know, because he didn't look that motivated, in my opinion, or at least as the fight progressed. Maybe he just thought he was that much better than Bisping. But for Bisping, I mean, if Anderson would have finished him in that third round, you got to think Anderson's probably getting a title shot. And I would hate to see that because Rockhold would just manhandle him so bad. But for Bisping, I don't think this fight really lands him a title shot. I got to think, Andrew, in my opinion, I don't think Anderson's going to retire. He thinks he won the fight. You got to say there has to be a rematch for this fight, not in London. In my opinion, I think it should be at UFC 200. We both were talking about it before the show. We're going to talk about what we would put on UFC 200, our official cards. A little sneak preview before we get into that. I think Anderson Bisping 2 should be on UFC 200. I think they should definitely have a rematch. It was too close, too controversial. Have it outside of London. let Anderson, you know, like, I just don't want to see Anderson fight anyone else. For his legacy, I think he has to beat Michael Bisping to get this monkey off his back, because you just can't have Michael Bisping beat him and then let that stay in the air. What do you think about the rematch? And then we'll go over UFC 200, if you would have Anderson on the card and who we'd have him fight.
Well, before I touch on the rematch, one thing I wanted to say, my last point I was trying to make is that really did hurt Anderson. I felt like it's too late, right? His whole game plan, which goes more to touch on what you were saying about, you know, not really showing a game plan to, you know, not utilize, you know, the first 3 or 4 minutes of the round, and then, you know, towards
no,
the end of it,
not.
You know, let Bisping steal it. And it was just missed opportunities left on the table.
So many.
And one thing that showed out to me, really with the age with Anderson, or one of the biggest things showed to me, is his power and his finishing power.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just father time catching up to him. You know, you got to think, if Anderson was 2 years younger, maybe even a year younger, hell, you know, that flying knee, Bisping wouldn't have been able to get up. Some of those
and
hard
his
shots.
Head speed too, you know, dodging punches.
He
dodged a lot,
slower.
But Bisping was landing a lot on him.
And in the fourth and fifth round, some of those, that big front kick he landed, you know, that one big shot I remember. You think if it's just old Anderson, Bisping wouldn't have had the strength. And it is very sad to see him, you know, revert back to his, just so many missed opportunities. And Ryan, I'm gonna say when we see a fight like this. I just want to say real quick, it does make me, you know, kind of miss the prior rules, and it kind of goes back to the scoring. You know, UFC is, you know, it's very round by round, and it's rigid.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we can accept this loss because, you know, we're used to it. Everyone knows that's how it goes. And like a pride rule where, you know, the person who displayed the most damage or dominated the last round or whatnot, you know, doesn't win the fight because it's round by round. Do you think, I don't know, the round by round is tough, but, you know, in your opinion, if this was pride rules, do you think Anderson would have won the fight if, you know, this was pride rules?
Yeah, the big thing is, I mean, if you look at it, I call it the Diaz brother rules, you know, like, who got fucked up more, you know, who had the bigger moments. You got to think Anderson, just that flying knee. But you also have to look, you know, Bisping had those two huge punches that, you know, two knockdowns in the fight. As far as, you know, how the fight ended, you would think a lot of judges, definitely in pride, you know, a fight ending with one fighter dominating the other, usually if you don't go round by round, Anderson would probably win because he was winning as the fight was ending and kind of, you know, stole the show towards the end of the fight and in the middle of the fight. But I also think the biggest thing is Anderson continued to try to, you know, stand against the cage and counter. And in the UFC, the big judging criteria is octagon control. And if you let, you know, the judges might have been across the ring and just seeing Michael Bisping's back, not only that, but the London crowd is cheering way louder every time Michael Bisping lands a punch. So, you know, they think that Michael Bisping's landing more than he was, and they could have just been seeing his back, you know, as Anderson's standing against the cage. We could have all missed, you know, I think we did miss a few Anderson counters, and I think that octagon control rule is where Michael Bisping won the round because he was, you know, obviously he had control of the octagon because, you know, he was chasing Anderson, but in some fights they don't rule it like that, like Condit versus Diaz. So you have to really think, like, you have to get that scoring and the right judges in there. And what would it have been like if it wasn't in London and it was in Brazil? Could have been totally different. At the end of the day, I do think Michael Bisping won overall a fight, UFC rules, pride rules, just because I feel like Anderson is a greater fighter and he missed too many opportunities and Bisping was game. I think Bisping landed a lot more combinations and was just a better fighter throughout the fight, even though Anderson had some of the bigger moments. I think, you know, Bisping just showed heart and kept coming and coming forward, and Anderson was just taking out a lot of time off and really playing around a lot during the fight. He would have just been attacking with his front kick, his jab. Like, old Anderson, if he got that clinch that he got on Bisping, No way Bisping just shrugs him off easily. Obviously, he would have kneed the fuck out of Bisping. But new, older Anderson, you know, Bisping threw him off immediately when he got the clinch. But Anderson, why aren't you trying to clinch like you used to? You killed people with that clinch. He didn't try that. He didn't throw elbows. It was really just a single game plan. He didn't use his kicks really enough to the body, you know, to the head. You know, it was just watch Conor McGregor and his ring IQ, you know, the way he breaks down fighters. Anderson just did not have that ring IQ. It was backing up against the fence. And this wasn't Stephen Bonner trying to push you against the fence and take you down and slower. This was Bisping who was just timing small little patty combos and scoring while you were standing against the fence. You're not fast enough to do that anymore. You didn't let Diaz do it too. You circled and you fought a smart fight. I just think Anderson really was just overconfident in this fight. Getting back to what you were saying, I was going to touch on one thing.
I did have
you
one
said.
Other quick question for you.
Go ahead.
Okay, so you brought it up a lot, and it's something I didn't even think about until you brought it up. But you know, the lack of a coaching and game plan in the whole fight was Anderson fishing for a knockout. We've seen Overeem have a tremendous turnaround in his career from going to Greg Jackson and getting the right coaching and a formed game plan. Now, Anderson, with his size and ability that he still has at freaking 40 years old,
he should be at King's MMA.
Do you think he should go to another coach, go to Greg Jackson even maybe?
No Greg Jackson.
If he gets a move like that, he needs to get back on top or make one last run at the belt. Because right now, Ryan, I am with you. I have no idea who I want to see Anderson fight next, because if he couldn't beat Bisping, we got problems.
I want to see him fight Bisping next, and if he can't win that fight, then he needs to retire. But I feel like he should join his fellow Brazilians, Dos Anjos, and Werdum, and Vanderlei Silva, at King's MMA with Rafael Cordell, whatever his name is. It was his old coach at Shoot Boxing. I know they had a falling out, but I think that the way they rebuilt Dos Anjos, the way they rebuilt Werdum, the way Vanderlei looked so good towards the end of his UFC career, and they have a bunch of other standouts there. I really think that's the camp for him. It's in California where he lives already. I think he just needs to get rid of the Nog brothers, also his manager. I think he's delusional, saying, you know, I feel like Anderson's in the shape to win the title again. I just don't think that's the way that his mind, you should be saying stuff like that to Anderson. I think he should have a totally different mindset, and I feel like that's the best gym for him. Maybe it's time for a guy like Anderson to really gym jump, where one day he's at King's for a couple weeks. Then he goes to Thailand, kind of like Fedor does these days. He'll go to the Netherlands and do his kickboxing. Maybe it's time for Anderson to tour around America and try a few different gyms when he's training in camp. It's time for him to get new looks. I mean, the Nogueira brothers aren't even that successful in the UFC. I mean, I think they're both done at this point. He needs new looks in training. You can't be the top dog at your gym forever. It would make wonders for him to be able to train with Vanderlei every day, with Werdum every day, with the guys who train with Dos Anjos every day. I mean, it would just be huge for him. And, you know, obviously you got the heavyweight champ and the lightweight champ there. He's not the top dog anymore. I don't want Greg Jackson to get his little slippery fingers. Plus, he's affiliated with GSP. I just don't think that works out. But there is a ton of guys, even Duke Rufus, who's a great coach, kickboxing coach. Even some guys, you know, out there who could get him to wrestle more and to clinch and, you know, to start doing that. And maybe we see a little bit of that Brazilian jiu-jitsu that he submitted Henderson so easily with and fucking got Chael Sonnen with. I think that kind of stuff he does not utilize enough. He needs coaches that will push him. And we've seen with King's MMA, Dos Anjos and Werdum, they're masters in fights, switching game plans and winning fights, like Werdum versus Kane, and also, you know, Dos Anjos in pretty much every fight. Rafael Cordeiro is pretty much a master. I think that's where he should be. Andrew, to get back towards the end of
what I was saying. I got one more for you to wrap up the Anderson combo.
Oh, no, we're going to talk more Anderson. I just want to get to the Bullshit Anderson fight.
Just another good question, not really the wrap up, but as far as Anderson and his scheduling, and it kind of ties into his next matchup at UFC 200, which
Ryan
wants to see. Yeah, there's nothing set in stone. So we got to look at this from, you know, the UFC's perspective, from Dana's perspective. 10-fight contract, I don't care what, you know, we might not want to see Anderson, but if you're Dana, you have to want that guy to fight as many times as he can before he retires.
Fight Dan Anderson, fight Vitor, fight this guy.
So with Anderson and where he is in his career, highly unlikely he's going to make a title run. I mean, granted, we'd both love to see it, but speaking
logically,
he'll
get killed by any
probably
of the top
won't
five
happen.
Right now.
He would get so killed. He'd get raped by Rockhold. Could you imagine that?
He would get thrown around by Yoel Romero.
It would be bad. But, Ryan, so for Anderson, his last couple of fights, what do you do? If you're not going to have him take a run, would you have him take a run or have keep trying to climb the middleweight ladder or kind of do it where you sprinkle in winnable fights? You know, would you kind of go out on winnable fights, nothing that tough? Or would you go in, like, big marquee matchups and try and make some, you know, maybe not matter on, as far as the title, but just classic matchups that the fans would like to see, maybe fights that never happened that should have happened?
As I'll touch on with the, you know, what he should do next, I definitely think he has to rematch Bisping. It's just something that has to happen. I don't think there's a need for a third fight if Anderson wins, but he's got to get a chance at revenge at Bisping, and I think he could easily beat him in the next fight. Then I think you look at either legacy fights or just, as you were saying, the biggest fights available, not as far as title, but as far as big names, and, you know, you can use Anderson if he can look impressive against Bisping in his second fight, because now you can't sell Anderson as much. But if he can come out and dominate on a huge stage, as we'll touch on in a second, and get that revenge, then all of a sudden he's back, and you can use him to either propel one of your younger champions as a co-main event, put him back in Brazil against another Brazilian and have, you know, get that Brazilian market back, have that GSP super fight. So I think you put him against Bisping, you try like hell to get GSP back in a huge pay-per-view, which I, at this point, I wouldn't even really want to see because I don't want to see GSP beat him. He's out of his prime.
Oh, I would give up. I would. I can't.
Yeah, I would still love to see it. And then I think you have to send him to Brazil in that classic Vitor Belfort rematch. I think that has to happen. Maybe at some point, you know, there's a couple other matchups out there for him. But I think those are matchups that indeed definitely have to happen. Andrew, I got to touch on it now. All right. Anderson Silva, his next fight, in my opinion, it should be against Michael Bisping, not in the main event, not in the co-main event, but on the third spot in my fantasy UFC 200 card. I don't know if you agree with him fighting Bisping.
I'm right with you.
But if you have him on UFC 200, not only who do you want him to fight, but let me hear your fantasy UFC 200 card. I got mine ready. If you need a few seconds, do yours.
Okay, I got them ready. I'll go real quick. Number one fight I do have on my card is Conor McGregor versus either Frankie Edgar or Arlo. Either Frankie Edgar or Donald Cerrone, depending on
Frankie,
you know,
the one fight he has to have at 145.
Yeah.
Still. The one that it would be big. It would be very big.
It would be huge. Number two is definitely Robbie Lawler, Carlos Condit rematch.
The fight that needs to happen.
Yeah, all the fights, other fights that, you know, I thought of all the other opponents, but I'm going to have to give it to Carlos Condit. Number three fight would be Anderson's son against Michael Bisping, the rematch.
Ooh,
because why would you not
like that?
I did as an agreement. Why would you not want to have Anderson on there? And, Ryan, I'm with you. As an Anderson fan, I really don't want to see him fight, you know, someone else better, I should say, than Michael Bisping until he proves he can beat Michael Bisping. Number four, I threw it on there. Had to throw it on there. The Wonder Boy, Stephen Thompson, he looked great in his last win over Johnny Hendricks. And I'm going to have him fight GSP 2.0. I want to see him
fight
Rory McDonald.
I got to say, pretty much Joe Rogan confirmed that fight is already, like, that's going to be a fight coming up.
Oh,
so
damn.
That's big that you predicted that.
That is pretty crazy. And then another fight I had on there, Ryan, was Reem against Travis Big Hoppa Brown.
Rematch.
I want to see the rematch. I want to see it happen again. It's hard to predict because who knows against Reem or Lowski. Who knows what will happen, but I needed a heavyweight, and I just tried to pick a very exciting one. I was thinking about putting Kane on the card, but I don't know if he will be back in time. If Kane is back in time, I would love to see him on the card, but not fighting for the title. Even though I would
love,
to Kane. And then another fight I had on there. Well, you know what, Ryan? I'm not going to say it. It was your fight, but I'll just name the first fighter. It did have Uriah Faber on it.
Oh,
and then to be announced, to be determined, one lightweight fight. I was still sifting through prospects and matchups. And then, of course, there needs to be a girl fight, and I would try as hard as I could to get Ronda Rousey back on that card. For
UFC, if Ronda's back, I think she's got to be main or co-main, but she said she can't eat it
out. UFC 200 is going to be the best card ever. I feel like at this point, Ryan, it'd be the best card ever on paper. It would need to have both Ronda and Conor. But do you even think, before you even try, do you even think the UFC would do that? Are they too greedy?
No,
I think
that if you get Ronda, you have to have her fight the home. Even home, if she loses to Misha, that's just the matchup that needs to happen. It would be such a big pay-per-view. And I think you do it like UFC 201. You can have not only this huge pay-per-view, then you have Jon Jones Cormier that will be huge on pay-per-view. Then you kind of have a dull couple pay-per-views, good fights, but not big sellers. Then a huge UFC 200, and then you follow with Ronda, who could maybe even outsell UFC 200 in her comeback. All right, my fantasy UFC 200.
That would be
real
crazy,
quick,
though, by the way.
I got Conor McGregor in my main event. I just threw him against Dos Anjos for the lightweight belt. Let's get that on. I think it should happen. Dos Anjos, don't pull out with a broken foot. Let's make it happen. Conor's the biggest star after he destroys Nate Diaz. My second fight, I have Robbie Lawler. Originally, I was going to say Condit, but since you stole my thunder, I'm saying George St. Pierre. Why is Lawler not being scheduled? Because I believe they are hiding GSP's comeback to really make UFC 200 a huge card.
That would be the best prediction ever, by the way.
Third fight, Anderson Silva, Bisping, rematch, huge fight. Fourth fight, I got Nate Diaz versus Anthony Pettis. Let's settle the rivalry. And it is just plain out exciting. My fifth fight on the main card, I got Steven Wonderboy Thompson fighting Carlos Condit in an absolute battle of strikers. Then, on my prelims, live on Fox, not Fox Sports 1, because it's UFC 200, Uriah Faber versus TJ Dillashaw, the rivalry. Goddamn, would that be a big prelim. It's almost like its own card. Then, Rumble Johnson in a battle, bad blood, going up to heavyweight while waiting for that 205 shot, fighting Overeem, the man he hates more than everybody. They hate each other from the Black Zillion days. Rumble versus Overeem. Rumble has fought a lot at heavyweight. Then I have Glover Teixeira. I know it's kind of a weird matchup. I've heard rumblings, though, versus Tyrone Spong. I heard Spong's going to sign with the UFC. He is one of the best strikers in the world. Throw him in there against Glover. Let's see what happens. My last two fights on the card, I just wrote down Paige Van Zandt. Just put her on there. She's hot. You need a girl fight. Her or Misha Tate, basically. One of those two. Even Paige Van Zandt, just karate hottie. Just do that. Just get two hotties on there. Plus, it's going to build that name. And a fight I forgot but would be probably higher up in the card, you got to have some legends on there. So actually two fights I would actually add, maybe one to each card. DJ Penn's return at 145 in a rematch against Diego Sanchez at 145.
Ooh.
He's going to cut the rematch. Both of them are legends. They deserve to be on UFC 100. And then the final one was, Vitor Belfort versus...
TJ Dillashaw.
What?
Uriah TJ Dillashaw.
Yeah, I know. That's my main event. I got six fights on my main card, six fights on my prelims.
Did you already
DJ Penn Diego on my prelims, somewhere in there. And then on the main card, Vitor Belfort versus Machida at 185. Basically, six fights, huge main card.